This is the Blue Room. 1 hour, everything Everton. The Blue Room on City Talk 105.9.
Good evening. Welcome to the Blue Room on City Talk 105.9 with me, Peter McPartland. I'm joined by Dave Bennett back in the studio. This show is getting worse than the Everton team, Dave. It's a revolving door every week. It's never got a settled side, very much like the Everton team. You've been away refereeing for the last few weeks. I wanted to ask you about this. What is that like? I mean, you know, you're only a young man, really. Let's be honest. You're an old man by DJing terms, but you're a young man for refereeing terms. What's that been like?
By footballing terms, I'm actually not though. I might even turn 30 this summer. So you know, my body's starting to tell me certain things. So I'd had a few injuries.
Your biological clock is ticking.
So I decided to trade in the boots and the glory for the cards and the black kit. And I'm approaching the end of my first season now, and it's going all right. I've made my peace. I'm not going to play for Everton. I realise that now. So, you know, I thought getting into the refereeing at a good age, and who knows where I could take you.
Do you find yourself watching the games differently now that you're all reffed up and you know what's what, and obviously you take abuse. And you've just been telling me off air you had to send someone off because they got in your face. You watch games a little bit differently now, and you know, if someone does start kicking off on the ref, you start thinking, hang on, he's right there.
No, yeah, you do. You really do. All my mates at the match hate me now. Like, literally, like, they'll be screaming for everything. And I do have sympathy for referees. It's a really hard job. And any other referees that are listening to it, they'll agree with me. You don't know how hard it is until you actually try and do it yourself. It's not as easy as what some people would have you make out it is.
Well, I'm sure there's a future for you, because if the standards of the Premier League are anything to go by, you'll be up that ladder in no time. So what would happen though? I mean, what would happen if you got there? You just have to just forget
I'd
about
be making a lot of money. That's what
you have to forget about your loyalties to Everton. And
well, you obviously can't referee anyone that sort of ties in and into the allegiances that you may have from where you're from and everything. So it would never get to the point where I'd have to referee Everton. This time last Tuesday, I ended up refereeing a game, St Cuthbert's, the team who I used to be the manager of, player manager of, won the National Cup with them and everything. I ended up getting assigned to their game, a six-pointer, winner-takes-all for the league against their Bootle last Tuesday. The Bootle players weren't too happy when they seen me turning up, but I was the referee who was meant to be on it couldn't do it. I was the best qualified that was available on the day. I ended up going doing it, calling it down the middle, and saying Cuthbert's won.
So, oh, well, there you go.
So, you know, people will say stuff, but I'm always fair-ped, you know that.
I know that. You're always straight down the line, and I'm sure you're a very positive referee as well. Right, coming up on the show, we're obviously going to talk about Saturday's disappointing defeat to Sunderland. We'll also be looking at that fair play league. Do you want it? Do you not want it? And also, obviously, we'll be looking at West Ham on Saturday, which is turning out for a race to be top 10. Race for the top 10. If you want to get in touch with the show, it is at the Blue Room ESC on Twitter and City Talk 105.9 on Twitter as well. If you want to have your views expressed on the show, just get them in and we'll read them out. Saturday, Dave, Sunderland, after about 5 minutes, I didn't think we were winning this game. But for you, do you come down on the fact that Everton were unlucky or that it was poor?
We were unlucky. There's no two ways about it. We were unlucky. I wouldn't go out and say we were poor as well. Roberto Martinez maybe dressed it up a bit too much when he said, if you played the game 10 times, 9 times you win it. I think 9 times you get at least a point, I'll put it that way, because Sunderland weren't really doing enough to win the game at any stage. They just sucker punched us for the first goal with probably the only Everton could concede that goal. If anyone ever wants to score the first goal for a team, Goodison Park's the place to be turning up, isn't it? Because you don't even have to be looking at the goal or trying to trap the ball. It'll just hit you and go in. And that's basically what happened. And I mean, in a situation like the game on Saturday, I don't think you can level that Everton were on the beach. I think they played with a good intensity in the first half. I'd like to see in these games, obviously, Gareth Barry gets hooked. Ultimately, having the type of 90 minutes we've seen him have very often this season, but he usually stays on the pitch. But thankfully, Martinez seen it. He moved Barkley back into Barry's role. I'd like to see us start games like that against these teams, like we did against QPR when we were forced to at home when Barry was suspended and he played Barkley withdrawn deeper in the midfield. And that's the way you could fit both Barkley and Naismith in the team. You could play Barkley centre mid and Naismith as the number 10 behind Lukaku. And they're all playing through the middle of the pitch where they want to be then. Everyone's saying you can't play Barkley and Naismith. You can't when you're moving one of them wide because they're sacrificing the game. But that's the way I think we should approach the game. But that being said, the team that we did put out, the tried and tested Martinez formula, I think we started with a good tempo. We could have been ahead at half time easily, one or two goals. There was a few half chances. Lukaku's, I think, got to do better on the two times we got him in behind. And we go 0-0. Second half, the tempo wasn't too bad. We put them under pressure and under the cosh for the first 10-15 minutes, and then we lose that sucker punch goal, and then it is a bit easier for Beach Mode to start activating in some players' brains. And you know, Sunderland, they get that extra 5 yards when they've gone 1-0 up, and siege mentality takes over, and they've got something to hang on to, and they can see safeties in sight. And I thought once we went 1-0 down, we'd find it very hard to win the game, as was the case.
Well, as I said, after 5 minutes, I didn't think Sunderland were going to get beat. I just couldn't see a way we were going to get round them. I don't know, it's just something I felt on the day. And they set out with three forwards, but all three forwards were not necessarily playing up front, and Defoe was running around using all of his experience, may I add, and filling in all the gaps and chasing after the ball and not giving any of our players any time. And you talk about intensity, I thought the first 5 or 10 minutes, yeah, we had a couple of chances, and they were like those kind of chances that you think, oh, we'll get plenty of them, and for some reason we just didn't. And
well, there was a lull. Sunderland grew into the game after 25 minutes, but then again, we did end the half strong. But that's when we had our best chances of the half.
I mean, I know what you're saying about being unlucky, but I thought we were poor. And the reason I say we were poor is that's Everton's 14th defeat this season, and so many of them have come like this, playing a slow tempo at times and not having the know-how or just to know when to speed it up or anything on the pitch to speed up. I found it interesting that this week Morales didn't start, but last week he didn't start. He did start last week. And I find that very odd, because I think Morales is one of those players that you can afford to play when you're at home, and he gives you that little bit of extra. Away from home, as I said last week on the show, he's so hit and miss, but I think at home you can afford to have it, because you need that little bit of extra something at times to break these teams down. I found that very strange that he didn't put him in for this game. And again, when you're saying, well, Barry, do we really need to have a Gareth Barry and James McCarthy in this game? Do we really need to do that? I mean, it's great having that triangle in there, but you know what Sunderland are going to try and do. They're going to try and come and they're going to try and stop you from playing. And that's what gets me more than anything, that we're coming to the end of the season, and whether it's at the end or not, and we've got less to play for than they have, it's the case that it's the same old. You're just waiting. You're sitting there. You're waiting for the opposition to get that goal. No matter how lucky, fluky, whatever it is, you're waiting for them to have it. And then as soon as that goal's in, then it becomes very hard. And that's when we stepped up, which again infuriates me, that's when we stepped up, when we scored. Why don't we come out and really, really, really have a go? I said this so many times this season. You watched Liverpool last season. They had games won after 30 minutes. Games were won and the other teams didn't know what had hit them. Now, I'm not saying we've got anywhere near that calibre of team that Liverpool had last season, but that's what I want to see as a fan. I want to see a team go out and really have a go at it, especially a poor side like Sunderland. And it's not there. And when you see them step up once you've gone one behind, it just... I find it very, very frustrating as a fan.
Well, Liverpool last year, they had games won in record time because, as you've just touched on, they were unplayable, the front three at that stage. And I agree. Everton need more firepower. They'd be have more of a chance. Not to be blowing teams away in the fashion that Suarez, Sterling, and Sturridge were, but they'd be more likely to get that breakthrough when they need it in the early exchanges. And if that means signing two strikers this summer, just to give us options to change it up and as you say, not be predictable and keep teams guessing, then that's what we're going to have to do. I mean, in terms of Morales, he's a great player, but I wouldn't have played him in either game because what's the point?
That's a fair point. I want him to either commit
to Everton and we know he's here, sign a contract and you're staying and we can build around that. Then, or if not, don't play him at all. He shouldn't have came into the team against Villa because we were absolutely brilliant against Man United and that team should have started at Villa. The momentum was gone. That's another mistake Roberto Martinez has been making throughout the season, changing winning sides. And not that there's been that many winning sides, but he should have never changed it for Villa. And then I could understand switching it back to the Man United team for this game. So no qualms about the team that went out there on Saturday. And Kevin Morales, people are still singing his name. I just think his attitude has stunk the second half of the season, and he shouldn't be wearing the shirt at the moment.
I just found it very odd that he would play him in a game like Villa when really what you wanted to do is be compact for the first 20-25 minutes, get through that, and then start hitting them on the break. And I know Morales gives you that pace to hit teams on the break, but he doesn't stay compact. And then so I find it strange that he played him away and then didn't play him at home. We've had a tweet in from Bracewell's Boots said, "I can understand us playing two defensive midfielders away from home, but at times, but not at home." And I understand why you played him, but for this game, I just you know.
Well, that's what I said. I mean, yeah. I've been saying it for a long time. Give Barkley a chance in that role. Obviously, when I say in that role, I don't mean playing as Gareth Barry, just sitting there, because Barkley will reinvent that role as the central midfielder next to McCarthy. And him and McCarthy are both... McCarthy has now became brave in possession, like Barkley is. And that's what you need in them situations, because teams are going to just sit in and you've got to make the runs at the right time and play the passes at the right time. Gareth Barry will just keep possession ticking over, and it doesn't help you in them situations when a team are just putting two banks in front of you. He's not going to be the man that breaks through that. So James McCarthy and Ross Barkley as the central midfielders with Stephen Naismith in front of them, I think is a formula that could work. And why not be trying that formula in a game like this when we've got literally nothing to play for? And it's something that could serve us very well next season.
Let's talk about Ross for a minute, because he took a lot of stick after this game.
I don't know why. I thought he was good. Thought he was quite sharp in possession.
I think the frustration is with Ross Barkley is we're still waiting. Do you know what I mean? We're still waiting for a consistency, a level of consistency. It's been a really poor season for him in the fashion of he's been...
From day one, it's been up against
injuries, and then come into the team, played out of position. Just never... You know, you look at last week and you think he played well against Manchester United, and then he's taken out the side and he comes back in the side. And I think there is a general frustration that there's no consistency. We were talking a couple of weeks ago, me and Matt, and we were saying, you know, he looked so much more mature against Manchester United. He was keeping the ball well. And then you come into this game and he starts doing things he was doing last year, where he's given the ball away cheaply and trying to find that killer pass at times when it wasn't needed. And it does frustrate people. And you flip it round and you think to yourself, there's going to be someone in his ear saying to him, "You're not going to do anything at this club if you stay here. You need to go somewhere else." And I think that's my biggest worry as a fan of Ross Barkley. But then on the other side of it, I think to myself, what are the coaches saying to him? You know, how are they developing him? You know, are they getting the best out of him? Because sometimes I think he's a very in-between player. Sometimes I don't think he's doing exactly what he wants to do. And it's leading him into all these mistakes. I mean, he said himself, he sees himself as a striker. So if he sees himself as a striker, then play him as a striker. You know, play him as not out-and-out striker, but someone who is given space, who's allowed space, allowed the freedom of the park.
Well, I always agree. Yeah, give him the space. And I think by moving him in these types of home games further back, that's where he's going to get the space, because they're going to allow him to have it there. Sometimes he's suffocated playing number 10 in a game like this at home. Away from home, where say you're at Old Trafford, then play him up the pitch as the foil for Lukaku. Because that's when the space is up the other end. Because we're going to be inviting pressure on and breaking ourselves. And a big open pitch away from home, that's where he's going to get the space. But at home, I think he's going to have more joy and more room to express himself in a deeper lying role. And I think the team will function a lot better in that situation. But, I mean, like summing up how our fans are with him, it is like there was a situation about 30 minutes in on the weekend where he gets the ball and he did everything right. He found space, he moved into space with it, and the crowd are kicking off on him to shoot, to pass it this way, pass that way. He delayed and delayed and delayed, and then it was because he was waiting and he found the perfect pass into Lukaku's feet on the penalty spot. Mm. And Lukaku didn't make the best of the situation. Yeah. But that sums up the whole situation of Ross Barkley at Goodison. People are too quick to jump on his back, and it's not right.
I just worry that he's not playing in a position that suits his talent. You've already mentioned likes him in a deeper role, but I just don't think, you know, I think he gets crowded out of games at times, doesn't he? And can't, you know, but the way he wants to do it, he wants to take people on, but players are quite intelligent and move them to where they want Ross Barkley to go. And I just think I almost feel like I just want him as a player to just be unleashed. Just go and do what you want to do, almost. And I know that's...
It was like last season, though. That was the vibe, yeah, wasn't it? It was like, yeah, the team was built around Ross Barkley's freedom. And that was when we saw some real consistent performances from him, because he was playing every week number 10 for the whole season. Mm. And...
Well, talking about number 10s, I've just seen an article in tonight's Echo saying that Everton are looking for a new number 10 and they're going to go abroad to sign, you know, they're going to have to go abroad if they want one. I mean, you know, I know we're crying out for more creativity, but so Ross is not a number 10. What is Ross? What does Roberto Martinez see Ross Barkley as if he's not a number 10? Because I do find that very strange. I mean, you're talking about, you know, a manager who 12 months ago was saying Ross Barkley was going to be the best player in the world. Now, I know Roberto Martinez likes to throw his praise around on a lot of his players, but, you know, that's a bold statement. You know, he was asked which one he liked better, Messi or Ronaldo, and he said Ross Barkley. So, you know, I mean, I would love to know where he sees him long term, if he's going to have him long term. You know, I might have to ask him, because I find that very strange. That
are you being granted access again?
I'll tell you more about that next week. when we're crying out for someone on the left, when we're crying out for other positions, I find it strange that we are looking at a number 10.
Yeah, well, we've got two really good number 10s, Barkley and Naismith, in my opinion. I'd see both of them as a number 10. So I personally would like to see us get more firepower to back up Lukaku, and there are other places in the team that do need strengthening. So it'll be interesting to see how the summer does play out, because I think there's going to be a bit of an overhaul, well, and a bit of an incoming.
Talking about that summer, we've got this Fair Play League to win, haven't we, if we want Europa League. That's if you want Europa League, of course. Get in touch with us. It is the Blue Room ESC on Twitter. We'll be back right after this.
The fans, the team, the gossip, the results. You're listening to the Blue Room on City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to the Blue Room, City Talk 105.9, with me, Peter McPartland, and Dave Bennett in the studio. Some of your tweets come in at the Blue Room ESC. We've had Kane's been on, said, no consistency in the team this year is the downfall, but Roberto Martinez's subs have been poor compared to last season. That's quite true. I've been very vocal about the subs this season. They never strike me to be, you know, at the right time, and they always seem to come after we've conceded.
Well, it was something he was lauded for last year, wasn't he? He was really good with substitutions last year. Maybe because he had better options on the bench with De La Feo and whatnot. But...
Yeah, yeah. Terry Smith says, agree, Ross. It's a positive article from Martinez. He's been very patient and got little back from our midfield. Final put pass has been poor, which is basically what we were saying in the first part. So it's the thing that seems to let him down a lot of the time. We spoke about it a little bit last week, this Fair Play League, and obviously the chance to play in the Europa League. Number one, I mean, would you be up for that?
Yeah, I mean, any Evertonian that goes the match and that, you'd take it, wouldn't you? I think if anyone says they wouldn't, then they're probably not being on any of them trips last season, because it's sort of the trips that you do live and breathe for as a supporter. And yeah, it'd be unfortunate if it with us starting in July. There's no two ways about that. You can't get around that. Mm. But I think if you managed it correctly, then it's doable. It could be treated as very competitive pre-season games, know what I mean? Yeah. So, and I'm one of the things why we got off to such a bad start this year was a lack of a good competitive pre-season. So in many ways it could help us.
Well, I think there would be four, obviously two-legged games, ties before we got into the group stages. So obviously, you know, eight games
before we've even where we were last year.
Yeah,
know what I mean?
eight games starting on the 2nd of July. And I believe also one of those games would be around the same time that Everton are going to Thailand for the tournament in the summer as well, where they're going to play Stoke, I think, and then they're going to either play Arsenal and the Thailand 11 in the second game. So, I mean, from that point, it'd be very interesting. Roberto Martinez has already said if they did get in, they would play a young team, obviously, certainly for the first couple of games, because a lot of these senior internationals will be away, because I think the last international date is the second week in June. So it's not like the players just finish in a couple of weeks and that's it. There is an international game as well, I think it's the 13th of June as well. So they'll get a little bit longer break as well. So it will be youth team players. But I think that's good because one of the criticisms of this team this season has been Roberto Martinez hasn't played enough kids. Now, whether that's because they're not good enough or the stresses of the season have prevented them, I don't know. But I'd like to see these kids. And even if we got into the Europa League and we were in the qualifiers and we went out even before the season started, I'd prefer that than not being it. I'd prefer these kids to get a chance in competitive games. And let's be honest, if we did get in, the type of games we'd be playing, I mean, you know, I'm not going to be disrespectful to anyone, but you're talking about very, very lower down leagues. I mean, the likes of, let's just say the likes of teams from Wales and people like that, you could end up playing, you know, you could be playing teams that we could easily beat. And
Liverpool fans are making jokes everywhere here, by the way.
I don't care. Listen, I'm not bothered. It will really
They'll be
bother.
Saying it's a home game, both legs and all that.
Fulham got to a final through the Fair Play League. And the way I look at it is, it would be European football. Those trips are great. You know, we went on them last year. They're fantastic. But I actually think, and I think people may think I'm completely wrong in this, but I actually think the Europa League could be an easier way of getting in the Champions League than the top four is now. Because I actually think the top four is closed, for certainly for the foreseeable future. I think all those four teams at the top this year are only going to spend more money. We've seen that already with Manchester United going out and buying, you know, Memphis Depay. You know, that it's already started. Arsenal are going to strengthen. They've got money now that the stadium's paid for. Chelsea are going to be looking to build a dynasty now. They're going to be looking to go back to back to back. And Man City need to respond, because it's been a poor season for them. And they've got a lot of players around that 30 mark, and they're going to be looking to go and buy, you know, the talents like Paul Pogba. For me, I think it's a closed shop. So I think
there was a window, wasn't it? Yeah. There was a window to get in there last season, and unfortunately, we didn't get there, even though we got the record points total to not get there. And that's a crying shame. It's typical Everton. Right place at the wrong time, as always. But yeah, and I can't agree with you more, Ped. I mean, about giving these kids a chance, it is completely win-win. When you think of you've got players like Tyus Brown and Galloway, Hennon, these type of lads who are being bigged up for playing in the development squads. If you throw them to the wolves and it's like, well, Everton's European campaign is on your shoulders for these few rounds, it's sink or swim. And I mean, if they swim, then brilliant. You know what I mean? We've won the game. We're one step closer to Europe. Their experiences came on. If they sink, then it's a learning curve for them, a big one. And fair play, they've found it a hard way in Europe, but it's better that than a game in the Premier League that's like hinging on something when we need them, and maybe us not, and maybe we could have called on them, but they didn't have the experience to be called on. The only way they're going to get the experience is playing in competitive games. And as you say, if we crash and burn and we go out, then what have we lost? Know what I mean? Nothing, because we weren't even expecting this. It's like a backdoor pass. And if we get in, the, as you say, the rewards are there to be seen, because if you can go on and win it, then you're in the Champions League. And I totally agree with you. It's probably an easier route than getting fourth.
Ian Snowden said today in his article in The Echo that he doesn't want it because we don't deserve it. But
someone gets it though. So
yeah, it's there to be taken, isn't it? It's there to be taken. It's there to be rammed. And I 100% agree with the kids. Listen, Everton, for the last 10, 15 years, I've had a fantastic track record of getting kids to 18 who are the top of the tree, under 18s, winning trophies, winning Premier League, you know, Premier League Youth Cup and all the rest of it. And then you get to 18, you think you've got this young prospect, you know, there. And then the next thing, they've gone to Bury. You know, there's you know, all this blooding of young players by David Moyes that was spoken about, all the blooding of Roberto Martinez, blooding young players. Where are they? Do you know what I mean? Where are these young players? There's been a handful come through. But it proves that sometimes you throw them in, you get a John Stones. You know, you get a player that you find is absolutely class. Some players go on loan and go to like the League One and stuff, and they struggle. It's not for them. I mean, you look at someone like Harry Kane, who went all those loan deals away from Spurs, never really stood out anywhere he went. You know, he was on the bench, I think, was it Norwich? Never really did anything. And then got to the Premier League and suddenly found he had a little bit more time, a little bit more space, and everything fell into place. And I just think you've got to throw players in now and again. Look at Browning. He played at Old Trafford, he played at Anfield this season, and he was brilliant in both games, and yet we don't see anything of him ever again. And it's frustrating that as a fan. I mean, I know the coaches know more than we do, but I would have no problem going into this tournament and just throwing those kids in and throwing a few older heads with them as well. You know, whoever's knocking around at Finch Farm at the time.
Well, it's a chance to look at these goalkeepers as well, isn't it? Because Martinez is saying he's not in for a goalkeeper, but we've got two prospects coming up behind Howard and Robles. So again, it's a situation where we could see one of them. If you're in there for goalkeeper, then fantastic.
I think if you're in here for any player, I mean, you're right. You've got to see them in the flesh at times. And you know what? Kids could come in, play a couple of games, three or four games, and play against European talent, go away to places never been to, playing you know, conditions they may never have played in. You know, you're not going to get all kinds of fancy grounds and all the rest of it at the qualifying stages of the Europa League. And it's a learning curve for them, and it's how they react to it as a player as well. You know, they might have all the skills in the world, but they mightn't have the temperament to go into a hostile place where it mightn't even be that many fans. You might be able to hear every individual fan shouting abuse at you. Who knows?
They're the best ones as well, exactly. By the way. Sigma Olomouc, that was probably like my favourite away in Europe.
But what annoys me is, you know, I've put this question out a couple of times on Twitter in the last couple of weeks. When you get reactions saying, I'd like to win a cup and finish top seven. I think, well, what do you want to finish top seven for? Literally, what's the point of finishing top seven?
You may as well win a cup and finish 17. That's what I was saying this season.
Look how that panned out, Dave.
That was my whole positivity, wasn't it?
That was the plan.
But then I put all my eggs in the Europa basket, and Kiev saw them off.
But I mean, don't get me wrong. The other way I look at it is, I really, really want to take the League Cup seriously this year. In fact, I want to take it so seriously that I'm prepared for the two games side to back to back to have weakened squads in the Premier League, as long as we have that a strong squad in the League Cup. Because I honestly feel that you can get into the League Cup final without too much bother if you really have a go at it. You know, we see teams all the times, you know, to get into the semi-final, and you look at who they've played, and they've played absolutely no one. The draw can be very, very kind in the League Cup. But for us, we either never take it seriously, or there's something else going on at the time that's sort of taken our eye off the prize. Now, what's great about the League Cup is it happens in the first stage of the season, where all those big teams are looking at other things. They're looking at the Champions League, or they're in the group stages of the Europa League, like we were this season. That takes your eye off it. And if you can get through that first stage, you know, up to Christmas, you're in the quarterfinals, the semi-finals, by the time you've got to the third round of the FA Cup. And as I say, unfortunately now, the way the Premier League is, we can be banging on the door as much as we want, and everyone else has done this. You know, you look at Southampton this year, great story, they're banging on the door, but ultimately, they're fighting for seventh and eighth place now. That's the way it goes. You know, the cream does rise to the top. You know, we're hearing all these reports that the league pretty much goes down to the wages. The highest, the top four wages end up being the top four pretty much. Every league spot, unless your QPR, ends up being where you should be. And that's the sadness of football now. So if you've got a cup competition to go for it. Throw everything into it.
Yeah, but it's Groundhog Day every year with me with the League Cup. I say it every single year. I think this year was the only season, because we had so much on, where it was like, I wasn't too fussed where we went out at Swansea, because I was thinking the Europa League for once with the Champions League at the end of it. I did think we had a genuine chance of going all the way in it. But every other year, the League Cup, you are talking, it's real talk. It's like when you were saying earlier about the Europa League is probably an easier way into the Champions League for us. It is, but it's still I've Everest to climb if you're going to get there.
But it's more enjoyable.
Yeah, it's an Everest, but it's easier than getting fourth. I agree with you on that. But the League Cup, realistically, is very winnable. Yeah. Very, very winnable. Now, Everton are cursed, innit? There's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
Because even when we go for it, we've came a cropper. Yeah. Obviously, we got to the semi-final with Moyes. But yeah, you have got to go for it. I mean, if bad luck gets in your way again and you don't win it, it's fair enough. But you've got to. There's no way we can't not prioritise that competition. It's been it's 20 years. You know what I mean? No, 20 years since we won a trophy, and it's the bread and butter of being a supporter.
Exactly.
Seeing your team lift the trophy.
You know, something's got to break this curse. Surely something's got to break this curse. And see, the league.
We never even won it when we were good.
Well, no. The mad thing with the League Cup is it actually fits in with Everton, with an Everton season. You know, it's only what? It's like a 6-month trophy. You know, you don't have to play that many games in it. If you do win it, you get a Europa League spot from it. So then you don't have to even worry too much about the league.
Yeah.
You know, you can sort of, then you can start messing around with the league. I'll never understand why Moyes never took it more seriously. I don't understand why Roberto Martinez played.
See, Moyes did go for it a few times. You know, we just come unstuck in it. It's just one of them things.
You say that, but we got to a semi-final. We played Chelsea. We were only 2-1 down. And the second leg of Goodison might as well have played 11 centre backs.
Yeah, but it's not like saying, oh, he didn't go for the second leg. It was just like at that time, that Moyes was struggled in big games sometimes. Mm. But we went for that cup that year. And that was probably one of my best seasons watching Everton. We were really good that year. We went quite far in the Europa League as well. So there's no, you can't even say you can't do both. But yeah, a few times we have gone for it, but it's just one of them cups where it just one of them cups, they all elude us. But that one, throughout history, even when we're the best team in the land, it eluded us.
Well, I'll tell you what, like, the mad thing is, I think Swansea now are challenging for Southampton for top seven. Top seven's going to be Europa League pretty much from now on, because it goes, in the FA Cup now, it goes back to the league, doesn't it? Rather than the runners-up. And I think most of the time, a top six team's going to win the FA Cup. And we're 4 wins from being top seven, which is mad, considering how rubbish the season's been. So that shows you don't even have to have a decent season and finish top seven now. So you can prioritise the cups ahead of the league now. I know there was a time this season where we were seriously looking over our shoulder, but if you can put something into the cups and then think, well, the next game, not too worried about that, like he did in the Europa League, it's there to be won, and you get a little bit of luck, you can find yourself at Wembley, and that's all
look
we
at
want.
The past winners and finalists of it in recent years. You've got the likes of Swansea have won it. Bradford have got to the final. Mm. It's very, very doable.
It is. We've talked ourselves going to Europe now. We just want the League Cup. Coming up in the show, we will be talking about West Ham on Saturday and also the future of Luke Garbutt.
1 hour, everything Everton on City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to the Blue Room with me, Peter McParland, and Dave Bennett in the studio for the final part of the show. West Ham on Saturday, Dave.
The cleanest game of football in Premier League.
Well, I was gonna come to that. It is. This is the game for the Fair Play Trophy Mega Bowl or a top ten challenge.
No so tackles.
Play Pina. Everyone kicks Pina. He'll be slow and injured, and they'll kick him even more. But
have you seen the criteria for this Fair Play League? Like how it's judged.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
But it's not just yellow and red cards. It's like it's how quickly you bring the ball back into play and how nice you are to the referee. So I imagine the referee's going to have a delightful afternoon in East London, because it's going to be a case of no fouls. The ball's going to be quickly back into play and everyone's going to be delightfully nice to him. So I think it's going to be one of them.
This is the thing, isn't it? I mean, what does Roberto Martinez honestly say to the players? Listen, lads, just, you know, don't kick anyone. You know, don't get booked. Or does he just go, just do what you've been doing all season, and that's why we're near the top of the Fair Play League?
And it's also attacking, if you show attacking intent for the fans, you get points as well. So let's just play four up front.
We're going to be punished for that back pass against QPR, aren't we? That's what it's going to be. We're going to be punished for that. Luke Garber looks like he'll be playing on Saturday. Leighton Baines has got an injury, which I'm not sure if the injury came because he crashed into the advertising hoardings or what, Luke Abbott's certainly going to be playing. Now, this is a very strange situation which has been worrying the fans all season, or certainly dogging the fans all season about Luke Abbott's situation. He's got a lot of talent. You know, every time he's played, he looks a good player. We've seen him in Wolfsburg. He was fantastic. He looked like a clone version of Baines, but with good corners. He's got a lot about him, and there's a potential that we could lose him in the summer with his contract ending.
Yeah,
it's a very, very strange situation. And
Didn't learn the lesson from Dan Gosselin, obviously.
Well, it's not just that, though. It's the things that are starting to come out. I mean, Roberto Martinez has said this week, well, you know, we could sign him, but there's no point keeping an unhappy player. Well, of course there is. What does that?
Because then you get a transfer fee for him down the road.
Well, what does that mean? I mean, why is the kid unhappy? I mean, dude, the one that really got me was when he was asked about him, and he said, "Yeah, he can play." And then in the same breath, said, "Oh, it's really disappointing that we haven't got Brian Oviedo to play." I was thinking, what kind of motivation is that for a young player to hear you're playing, but actually if my other player was playing, your third choice?
Yeah.
I really can't understand that. I don't know whether they're almost setting us up, you know, for him to leave, or trying to make him the bad guy. I don't know what's going through the club's head. I mean, there's been suggestions that they want him to sign a deal and then they'll put him out on loan. Somewhere like Bournemouth might be a good place for him to go. But at the moment, things don't look too well. The noises coming out of the club don't sound too well, you know.
Especially when you're at Liverpool. Liverpool are interested, you know what I mean? If he ends up going there, then do you know what? I wouldn't even blame. I wouldn't even blame Luke Garbutt, because put yourself in his shoes. He's not an people all scoff at that and go, "What are you on about?" He's not an Evertonian. Mm-hmm. He's a kid that we pluck from Leeds. Yeah. In similarly like dubious circumstances. I remember Ken Bates absolutely being livid about us stealing him from them.
Well,
and he's got no undying loyalty to Everton. And at the end of the day, if someone like Liverpool did come calling, and they'd be a fool not to, by the way, because he's very talented.
Yeah, yeah.
And Liverpool aren't exactly blessed in fullback areas. Like we do have options at left back, as we just said. We've got Baines and Oviedo. And he sees them two lads in front of him, and noises coming from Roberto Martinez, what you've just said. If he gets told, well, John Flanagan's got a long-term injury, Jose Enrique is out the door, Glenn Johnson sometimes operates at a left back over there.
He's going as well.
He's off. So you know, and someone like, maybe Brendan Rodgers might not be the manager, and that'd be the saving grace. But if Brendan Rodgers was staying and said, "Look, I'm going to put you in the team," he'd be a fool not to go over there.
Well, that's the general feeling. This rumour of Liverpool being interested has been hanging around for a while. Whether it's true or not, we don't know, obviously. But a lot of Everton fans are of the same way you're thinking there. They wouldn't blame the kid. Now, for an Evertonian to say they wouldn't blame a kid for leaving the club and going to Liverpool, that takes something, that. And, you know, we've got a left-back who's now in his 30s who hasn't been this good this season, but, you know, all his stats are still pretty good. But we want to see a young lad competing with him, pushing him, trying to get into the team. We want that. I find it very, very frustrating. I find it frustrating that it hasn't already been signed and sealed and done. Not a year ago, maybe a couple of years ago. He should have got a couple of extra years. It's all very, very strange. And this was what frustrates fans. You know, it's been a poor season and fans are already frustrating. And when you're losing your up and coming talent,
yeah,
and other clubs in the Premier League are looking at them, then you think, surely, you know, something's not right.
Well, it isn't. I mean, I touched on Dan Gosselin earlier. He was a player who, I'm not saying was a world beater, but he was a very useful member of the Everton squad. And before his injury problems, he had a decent market value if he was under a long-term contract. We let that run down. And that was a player who was actually in the team, doing well, coming on, scoring winners in derbies, scoring winners against Man United. And we let that situation rumble on and got to the point where we ended up doing the faux pas with gentlemen's agreements and not actually tying them down. And it's worrying when bright talent coming through the ranks isn't tied down to long-term contracts. It is very, and if we lose them for free, then it will leave a very sour taste.
And it goes into the bigger picture as well, this. We're talking about the last few games, and Roberto Martinez saying, you know, he wasn't prepared to play any kids, and he was going to go for it, and he wanted to finish in the top 10. Yet we've just put in two awful performances with players like, you know, Aidan McGeady coming into the side, and you're thinking, what?
Don't put it on McGeady. He played like 30 seconds.
I'm not putting on McGeady. What I'm saying is, McGeady doesn't inspire anyone in the crowd, and yet if you threw a kid on for the last couple of minutes, that gives fans something to cling on to. You know what I mean? That gives fans something to cling on to. Fans, a lot of Evertonians, I know it's West Ham's expensive, and I'm not saying put out, you know, the team that played the final game of the Europa group stages, but I would love to see a couple of kids given a chance in these games. And yeah, we're putting out the same old, that's been pretty poor all season. And that plays into this whole Luke Garber thing. You know, the Wolfsburg game, it always sticks in my mind because he was great playing against a good side away from home. 3 days later, we go to White Hart Lane where Baines clearly wasn't fit and had a poor game. And you think about that game, you think, why didn't Luke Garber just stay in the side? Mm. You know, it's happened so many times this season where players like Baines and Barry have played in games where they clearly weren't fit. They played poorly when there should have been youth players stepping up or other squad players stepping up, and it hasn't happened.
Yeah, well, Martinez has got that to answer for this season. His selections haven't been brave enough, and he hasn't been brave enough in terms of sticking with certain players at certain stages, and it's something he will have to improve on if he's going to win a lot of the crowd back over next season and turn it back towards the first season where he was very brave and people were very complimentary of him being a brave manager, in not only in the way we set up, but in the way he made changes in games. This season, I think, obviously we got off to a shaky start. He's not that he shows it in his interviews, he has been shook by the way the season's gone, and he's made mistakes as we've gone along. It's been a bit of a train wreck, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, but I think he deserves the third next season to get right, and he does have to maybe look back to his first season when he was a lot braver in his selections and his substitutions and giving youth a chance.
Well, we've all said this is a massive summer. There's got to be players that have got to go out the door. There's been rumblings this week with Sylvain Distan and, you know, he'll be leaving, and people like Alcaraz hopefully be leaving, and a couple of other players will be going out the door. And youth will need to step up, and, you know, this has been the theme all the way through the show, I suppose. Youth will have to step up at some point, added with a few incoming players from other clubs. You know, but, you know, as an Evertonian growing up, I've always wanted to see young players come into the side, and, you know, that's always been the bedrock for me for being Evertonian and Everton's team. Always youth players, always coming through.
Yeah, well, in my time of watching Everton, that's been the most exciting signings have always been from the academy, because very rare we'll go out and smash a transfer record and get in a marquee player. It's when you've seen the likes of Wayne Rooney, Franny Jeffers, players like this come in and be pushed to the forefront and then be a really exciting talent, and a talent that you wouldn't have been able to sign from another club, but you've unearthed them, and they've been unearthed because they've been given a chance and they've been pushed into the limelight.
And it also says to other players, you'll get your chance. You know, there is the player to aim at. That was always the thing that was said. There is the player in the first team. That's what you aim for. You know, that can be you one day, and we don't want that to stop. You know, that's what drives a lot of these young players. Do you think we'll beat them, West Ham? It's going to be a tough game.
Well, we do well at the Berlin ground, don't we? We always have done, and it's the last one there. So
second to last.
Well, it's the last one for us there. But
don't move till the season after.
You're messing. I thought they're there next season.
No. Next season is their last game.
No, you're wrong.
I'm not wrong.
You're wrong, I'm sure.
Listen, I'm never wrong.
Well, Everton are going to win either way.
All right. Hopefully we'll win, and we'll get that top 10 spot. And then we'll get the Fair Play Trophy Mega Bowl, and we'll all be happy. 2nd of July. Don't go on holiday. Go to the Europa League game in Slovakia or something. We'll be back next week at night.
This is the Blue Room. 1 hour, everything Everton. The Blue Room on City Talk 105.9.